OWC Radio 2.0, episode number 20. A great conversation with Brady Betzel. And I have a terrible voice. Hey everyone, Tim Robertson here on OWC Radio. It's great to be back. I apologize for skipping a week on you guys there. We didn't go back to a bi-weekly show, it's still weekly, but I was actually on the road all of last week. I literally flew out on a Sunday and didn't come back until Saturday. I was in both Denver and then the Boston area. And I don't know if you could tell by my voice that it took its toll. I don't sound like I usually do, but you know, it happens. What can you do? It was a great show. I did two shows. They were both good shows, and we'll talk. We've got other shows upcoming, and we'll talk about those as we get a little closer. But I will say, next week, as I record this, it's October 28th. So the first week in November. I will be in Los Angeles for the MacTech conference. If you go to MacTech.com, you can learn more about it. If you're a Mac professional and you want to learn more about your craft, MacTech is a great conference that you're going to learn a lot. They've got some really good sessions. A lot of people just like you that you can learn from. That peer education is always very important. And we are a big sponsor of this MacTech conference coming up. And I will be there in person in LA. And if you want to meet me, that would be the perfect place. I'm gonna go to MacTech.com so I can give you guys exactly the dates. My voice is just—it's been crazy because, Denver. I've never been to Denver before, and I was fine the first 24 hours, but I was told, that. Some people have a negative reaction to that altitude, and I absolutely did, unfortunately. And as you could probably hear with my voice, yeah, it didn't happen well for me. So, anyways, so the MacTech conference is a 3-day conference. I believe it's they didn't give me dates on here. Okay, here we go. November 5th through the 7th. So 5, 6, and 7 of November. That is next week as I record this episode. It is in Los Angeles. Let me scroll down for the venue. I know what the venue is. I just don't want to say it without 100% knowing. It's the Manhattan Beach Marriott. So if you are in the LA area and this sounds like it's something that you would be interested in, go to MacTech.com /conference, and you can register for the event right there. And you can meet me in person at the event. And it's going to be really cool. We're going to have a table. We're going to have our products out there. So if you want to get some hands-on time with OWC products, this is going to be the opportunity to do so. And it should be fun. It should be a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to it. And, you know, I'll discuss it more after the event, how it went. But that being said, I'm going to try to record the next OWC Radio from that event, either from my hotel room or maybe right there on the show floor. So we'll see how that goes. If I can't, then we won't be recording a show next week because I'm not going to record it early. I want to see if we can actually do it at the event. So if you don't see an OWC Radio next week, that's why I wasn't able to record it there. But hopefully I'll be able to because it's promising to be a pretty interesting event. Neil Tichton, the publisher of MacTech, puts on a really good show. And this one looks to be no different. So I am an update on my iPhone 6 Plus. No update. I'm still waiting. It's brutal. To be quite honest, I want to get this phone in. I want to start using it. I want to, that big screen really is just, it's such a lure to me. It's like a siren song. And, you know, being away from home and being on the road for 6 days last week and driving or being in an area, definitely driving in an area where you don't know, a larger screened iPhone would have been, well, awesome. It would have allowed me to more quickly see directions via GPS. Yes, I'm trying to give you guys an excuse on why I need the 6 Plus, but I really do want it. And I'm checking AT&T's website. That's my provider. It's not an endorsement. It's just who I happen to have my phone coverage with. And that's because I bought the original iPhone back in 2007. And I spent $699 for it. And I still have that phone, by the way. Still works. Still keeps a charge. Doesn't work with hardly any of the software that's out there now. But that phone does still work. I still have it. I own every single iPhone I've ever purchased. They're basically glorified iPod touches now. I think I've talked about that on the show. But even from way back then, I've wanted a bigger iPhone. Come on, AT&T. So when Apple first released the iPhone, there was only one carrier it worked with, and that was AT&T. And I was with another carrier when the iPhone was announced, and I switched carriers just to have the iPhone. I bet a lot of you guys were like that too, right? You switched because that's where the iPhone was. No, AT&T, I will not take a survey after I'm done using your website. Do you hate those? I don't mind them too much, honestly. So my pending shipment for my iPhone 6 Plus, 64 gigabytes. Shipping date is November 12th through the 21st. So sometime within that week, they should be shipping it. I think they'll probably ship it via Blind Mule. So it should take about 3 months to get here. At least that's kind of how it seems. But in the meantime, I did get my newer iOS fix. Now, yes, 2 weeks ago, I did upgrade my iPhone 5S to the latest operating system. But, and what I'm talking about right now is an actual hardware device. And that is, I got an iPad Air 2, 64 gigabytes, coincidentally enough. It is replacing my iPad 3. Did I say iPhone? Yeah. It's replacing my iPad 3. I didn't really consider an iPad mini. I like the bigger size, and I'm kind of hoping that the 6 Plus kind of gets that craving out that maybe I kind of wanted a smaller iPad with the mini. I think the 6 Plus will take care of that, but I did want the full size iPad. I keep wanting to say iPod. I don't know why. Man, this thing is fast, I got to tell you. It's really, really fast. Not just compared to my iPad 3. It's fast. I'm kind of amazed at how responsive it is. I know a lot of people are having problems with iOS right now, the new upgrade. I haven't had any problems at all. At least not that I can remember. Nothing. I didn't upgrade any really older devices to it either. So, you know, if you're running iOS 8 and it's really buggy, maybe it's because you're on an iPad 2. I've heard bad things happen. But in the meantime, it's running really well for me. And it's great on this new iPad. It's, you know, it's the full-size iPad, but man, it's so much smaller than my iPad 3, this new iPad Air 2. It's skinnier. It's thinner. It's fantastic. It feels like a smaller unit, but the screen size is exactly the same. But my biggest problem is I don't have a case yet. I wasn't anticipating getting it when I got it, and I wasn't prepared with a case. And using it without a case, just, it really scares me. It really does. And it's same thing with my upcoming iPhone 6 Plus. I want to definitely get cases for these machines because, you know, one drop without a case and not good. And a case is always very high on my get it quickly. So I've got one on order. It should be here tomorrow. I don't know what I'm going to do with my iPhone 6 Plus yet. I don't know if I'm going to order a case ahead of time. It's such a big unit that I really want to be mindful of the case that I buy because I don't want to get a real thick one. because then it's going to be a gigantic unit and nobody wants that, at least of all me. So, you know, it's one of those things that I'm just going to jump on the OWC website and find one that I think is going to fit it really well, that's attractive to me, and is not going to add much bulk. Now, some people like them bulky. And I can kind of, I get that if you have a 4, 4S, or even a 5S. But that 6 Plus is just too big to add much more bulk. I mean, you do that and you have to carry your phone in a briefcase or a purse. And, you know, I don't carry a briefcase or a purse. Although, I've seen some purses that were pretty cool. So, what's going on with you guys? Anything new? Awesome. Anyways, this is a fun episode. As you guys know, I've been doing conversations with everyday people, and I reached out to someone brand new, and it was a fun conversation. His name's Brady, and he's an editor, but he's got a pretty good history in the industry, and I really enjoyed talking to him. Now, his second son was just born 18 days ago, and you will hear the baby make a little bit of noise in the background, but quite honestly, Not that much. I was expecting little Sawyer to make a lot of noise, and he didn't. So he was awesome. But his name is Brady Betzel. I think you guys will enjoy this conversation. I know I had a lot of fun talking to him. And one of the things that we talk about towards the end of the interview is he actually is more of a PC guy, and he hasn't bought anything from OWC yet. And then we start talking about upgrading his older Mac. He's got a 4-year-old MacBook Pro to an SSD. And as you guys listen, you can kind of hear his excitement about the prospect of putting a faster SSD into his machine and what it's going to do for him. Now, some people may think, well, why are you talking to someone that has never bought anything from you before? Well, I think it's important to talk to a lot of different people. And here's somebody that isn't a hardcore Mac user, but he does have a Mac, and I wanted to get his perspective on things, and we did. And he has a need. He has a need to either buy a new computer or upgrade his old one. And it's a conundrum that a lot of people, hardcore and non-hardcore people, face all the time. Do I sink more money into the older machine? That works fine. It's just getting a little slow. Or do I bite the bullet, buy a brand new machine, and hope I can get, you know, I could sell my old one for whatever I can get out of it. Personally, I like the upgrade option. I have a 2011 MacBook Pro with an SSD, and it's so fast because of the SSD and the maxed out RAM that I don't even have a twinge of, oh, I really would like that new MacBook Pro, because they're really not offering anything in the new MacBook Pros that I feel I need over and above what I already have. This machine is blazingly fast, and it does every single thing I want it to do. Everything. There isn't one thing that either my iMac or my MacBook Pro can't do. Why do I need a brand new machine? Why do I need to spend that much money? And I bet there's a lot of you that's in the same boat. Why do you need to spend that much money on a brand new machine when your 4-year-old MacBook Pro, for a quarter of the cost, can just be a speed demon, super fast. Pull out the optical drive, put in a data doubler with an SSD, max out the RAM, and you have essentially a brand new machine that is just going to blow you away with speed and reliability. Now, let's not forget reliability. Now, Macs are notorious for being pretty reliable, but when you start filling up those old hard drives, especially the 5400 RPM ones and those laptops, it gets a little crashy sometimes. You get some beach balls. You're sitting there waiting for things to happen. If you're kind of getting used to that on your machine, consider an SSD, because I'm telling you, beach balls, bye-bye. It's so much faster. So with that, I'm going to wrap up this segment. By the way, my voice is still... I think I sound like a sexy Demi Moore from the 80s. Probably not, no. Maybe it doesn't sound so much. Maybe after I convert this down to an MP3 and put some compression on it, maybe I won't sound all that different. But to my own ear, I sound totally different right now. So with that, I'm going to wrap up this segment. I'd love to have feedback from you guys. It's owcradio@macsales.com. That's how you can reach out and give me your thoughts on anything. You got a question about your Mac, your iPhone, your iPad, your Performa 410, send an email. We'll find the answer together and get it answered right here on OWC Radio. Make sure you check out our blog. That's where we always, we got some interesting content all the time up there. In fact, just yesterday as I record this, I posted up, I thought was kind of neat. And I don't know, some people, most people, to be honest, didn't seem to care much for it. It was, this guy had put kind of this iWatch emulator on his iPhone. And yeah, I thought it was kind of neat. I posted the video. But we also have other things that, actually, I didn't post that on the blog. I posted that on social media. So if you're not following us on social media, you're missing a lot of cool content. I posted that up on Twitter and Facebook. So at MacSales on Twitter, that's how you'd find us. And of course, if you're going to, if you're going to be on social media, you're on Facebook. Just look for us on Facebook, either Newer Tech or OWC. We're on both of those. But you gotta follow us on both of those because I post a lot of stuff on both those sites that don't make it to the blog. So you're missing half the content. But what I did post up there was somebody took the brand new Retina iMac and they upgraded the RAM. And no one has seen that before. So we've got a video up on our blog, which is blog.macsales.com. The post is called Watch This OWC RAM Upgrade on iMac with Retina. His name was Danny Wingett. He doesn't work for us. He's not an employee, but he got RAM from us. And he did this installation video. And it was really, really cool to watch. So go check that out. And we have troubleshooting stuff up there. Troubleshooting a new Mac from an old drive with OS X. No, just kidding. OS X Yosemite. We've got an article about that. So make sure you check out the blog, blog.macsales.com. And if you have a need for SSD, a RAID, RAM, or how about a really good used Mac, MacSales.com is your destination. With that, I'm going to wrap up this segment. Head over and listen to the conversation with, excuse me. Boy, I tell you that when your voice starts to go out, it always hits at the worst possible time. I was about to say Brady and my vocal cords just locked right up right there. I apologize for that, but I really wanted to get this this posted and recorded as soon as possible because I skipped a whole week. So voice or no voice problems be darned, I'm doing an OWC radio. Thanks for listening, and see you hopefully in a week. And we are back here on the second segment of OWC Radio 2.0, episode number 20, as I said earlier in the show. And I have a special guest. You know, we've been doing these customer conversations. I think that's the right term I would like to use. And this time around, we've got a good one. Brady Betzel. Is that how you pronounce your name?
That's it. You got it.
Great. Now, Brady, you're not an actor or somebody famous. You're just a regular guy like me.
Oh, yeah, regular guy, just behind the scenes.
But I want to start off by saying congratulations. I know you have a newborn in the house, born on the 10th of October.
That's it. He's actually in my arms right now, so he'll be on the podcast, too.
There you go. So we are recording this on, October 28th, so he is 18 days old today.
That's it.
18 days old, and look, he's already an international star on a podcast.
Yep.
So I do want to give a heads up to the listeners. You know, when it comes to podcasting, I don't do a whole lot of heavy editing. It's the real world. And if the baby make noise, the baby makes noise. That's the way it is. I actually kind of like it, to be honest, Brady. It's not a sterile environment. This is life.
No, and sometimes I'm doing work, side work, and baby's crying, so you got to get the baby when you're doing work. Doesn't stop.
Nope. So I cheated here. I actually went to your LinkedIn page and looked up a little information on you. Actually, I did this before I even reached out. Now, we met via Twitter, and I asked you if you'd be interested in coming on the podcast on Twitter. And, of course, your initial reaction is, who, me?
Yeah, exactly.
I look for people on Twitter and Facebook that I think would be interesting. something different on the show. And you definitely fit the bill. And I thought, oh, this would be a cool cat to talk to on the show. The smallest part of your resume would be you're an editor with Bunham.
Is that how you say it? Bunham & Murray.
Bunham & Murray Productions.
Bunham & Murray, yep.
In Van Nuys, California.
Yeah, Van Nuys.
Van Nuys?
Yep, Valley, a little north of L.A.
I'm gonna blame my voice, even though it has nothing to do with pronunciation. So what do you do as an editor?
I work on at the moment, I just finished up a show called Bad Girls Club on Oxygen, which is a reality show. And I'm about to, in a few weeks, I'm going to go on to a show called The Real World, which a few more people have heard of.
You're going
to
be an editor on The Real World?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
I thought you meant you're going to be on The Real World. I was like, don't do it.
That'd be even better, right?
No, that'd be horrible,
I'm
Brady.
Shaping it instead of being on it, thank goodness.
Now, I have to imagine, and we'll get into some of your history here too, but I have to imagine that if you have a three-camera sitcom or a major motion picture, that's a totally different skill set than editing reality TV, where you probably have a billion times more film to go through. Because you never know when something's going to happen or how it's going to happen. I don't know what the shooting schedule is like, but I have to imagine as an editor, that's got to be some unique challenges.
Oh, yeah. I can't necessarily comment particularly on what I'm working on
now. No, of course not.
But previously, I mean, you can get, it's ridiculous. Sometimes you can get 8 to 10 cameras shooting 12 hours a day. And so, I mean, you can get upwards of 200 hours of footage if you have enough cameras per day, and the assistant editors have to go 24 hours a day digitizing and then grouping the footage so you have all your angles set up, and it's a big workload. I mean, a lot of people underestimate how much time actually goes into the prep work, and if you don't do the proper prep work, then when I'm editing, it's a lot tougher than it should be.
Now, you don't obviously edit in a vacuum. There's other people that work with you. How does that mm-hmm. collaboration work when you sit down and start figuring out what's going to be in this episode and you know, what you cut, what you bring in? Obviously, you have some ideas of, oh, this happened and this is definitely in this episode. But, I mean, how much collaboration goes into figuring out what's where?
Typically, like I said, in the past, I don't know, a few years ago, I worked on a couple of shows, the Real Housewives series, and it's all, I've only been on Avid my career, which is kind of interesting, but we use either the Unity or the ISIS. Mm-hmm. And so there can be anywhere from 12 to 20 editors on a series. And there's usually a story department that will kind of go over the footage ahead of time, maybe a few weeks before the editors get in. Kind of do a rough, I guess you could call it a rough cut, but it's more of a string out.
Yeah, kind of an outline.
Yeah, just like a story a story pass, if you will. And they get it roughly into shape, maybe 10 to 20 minutes over the total runtime you're looking for. And then that's when the editors come in, and usually the story's pretty nailed down. And, you know, when I'm watching the raw footage, sometimes I'll find things that I'm like, hey, why don't we throw that in there because it'll add to the story, or, hey, this didn't work, let's take that out. So, and then we'll have a discussion about it, and sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't.
How frustrating is it in the editing booth when you think, you know, you can hear somebody say something and there's just no camera on that person?
Yeah. In reality, I guess that happens more often than not just because of the nature of it. I mean, you can't have isolated audio being recorded everywhere all the time. And I don't know, that's kind of the fun of it, I guess. You got to figure out how to make it work. It's kind of like a puzzle.
Yeah, I can imagine. So let's
also go. Frustrating, sorry.
Well, yeah, I think that's kind of any kind of creative process that you're doing, you get a lot of that, I would imagine, a lot of frustration. But I have to also imagine that when you see your work done and complete, there's a lot of satisfaction there.
Oh, yeah, that's yeah. The frustrating part, sometimes you have to kind of take a step back and just be like, I mean, I love what I'm doing, so is it really frustrating in the grand scheme of things, or is it just me being kind of nitpicky and OCD about stuff? So if you can step back and just be like, hey, in the end it's going to look awesome and a million people could watch it, then usually you're okay with it.
Why an editor?
That is a good question. When I was in college, I was starting off as a computer science major, and I was just planning on, I don't know, making programming. I don't know what I was going to do, to be honest, but I just like computers, fixing them. And so I took a class that that was combining programming and gaming, which kind of led me into seeing the multimedia aspect of production. And I kind of was like, you know what? This computer programming stuff is kind of boring, and I can't sit in front of a computer all day. Let's see what else I could do. And that led me to do video stuff. And I was like, you know what? Editing seems right up my alley. It's half technical, half creative.
I was going to say, the technical background that you brought to school with you and that you were learning until you kind of changed tracks, that lays a good foundation for editing because it's all technological now.
Yeah, especially these days. Like, when I was an assistant editor, we were just starting the transition from beta and digibeta over to file-based media. And so I started kind of editing when the real technical stuff was falling on the assistant editors. But because I know it, I mean, I'm so far ahead of a lot of editors that they just go, oh, you're in a whole different field because you know stuff that I will never know. And it really did help me out.
So is there a big sea change going in the creative side on the editors and the producers? Well, maybe not the producers, but definitely the editors, the old school guys that are literally scotch taping pieces of tape together. And guys like you who are very, you know, like you said, you've always been on Avid.
Yeah, it's very interesting because I've worked with some guys that on some talk shows I worked on that have been around 10, 20, 30 years and are, I mean, they're the best at storytelling, and they might not know what I know, but they can sure fake it with telling a good story. But then when they're asked to import media from an XD cam, they're like, I don't know what to do. And so I'm like, well, I do. Let me do it. Or if they're asking, hey, we need graphics built in After Effects, they're like, I don't know how to do any of that. I barely know what a keyframe is. So that's where I can jump in back. Hey, I know After Effects. I know this. I know that. And I don't know. These days, I think that actually gets me a lot more work.
Yeah.
I'm kind of like I kind of know a little bit about everything, which, you know, that's a whole other discussion about if that's good or not. But it just, I mean, knowing that stuff really these days is necessary in order to get ahead. Otherwise, you can get lost.
I have to assume that you've worked with a lot of veteran editors over your career so far.
Yeah.
Any that were more memorable than the others, maybe, or told you some really fun stories that you could share on a rated G podcast?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's funny. There's not really many rated R stories per se. I mean, the good stuff is I came from one guy, his name's Kurt Heidel, and he does a lot of late night comedy shows, and I love working on late night comedy shows, and I was an assistant editor for him, and he was just the nicest guy and was always willing to tell me what he knew. And what was interesting about him is he wasn't really into keyboard shortcuts, so he was a real mouse heavy guy.
Oh yeah.
I guess in the linear days, that was kind of the same workflow. And so I'm a little bit faster than most at keyboard shortcuts. That's what people tell me, at least. So he was like, wow, you're blazing. I can never do that. And I was like, yeah, but you're great at storytelling and creative that I'm just beginning to start. So it was more about him, his knowledge. He would pass on knowledge that I just would never know because of the linear stuff, I guess. I'm guessing that's where he got it from.
And I have to imagine that it's stuff that you don't learn in school.
Oh, no. No, not at all. I mean, I was on this late-night talk show called Lopez Tonight. Oops, sorry about that.
No, that's okay.
Which maybe he doesn't like that show. Yeah. George Lopez had a late-night show on TBS for a little while, and it was a really crazy workflow where we'd film at 5 p.m., recording live to our ISIS, and we would be editing from 7 or so to 8 p.m., and I would be feeding live out of my edit bay to the to where they feed the show to air. And sometimes I'd be watching Act 1 air while I was feeding Act 2, and it was during those crunch times, if something went wrong, the show wouldn't air. So he would just be there supporting, and he's like, hey, man, the worst I can do is not air. I'm like, yeah, you're right. Exactly. Worst I can do is not air. But just, the veteran guys just kept calm. That was the coolest thing, is they would just, no matter what, it's like you're not saving the world necessarily. So
eye of the storm then.
Yeah, just do it. I mean, what are you going to do? Just do it. You'll be fine.
So that's, yeah, can I then say that's probably the biggest lesson you learn from these veteran guys is just to stay calm and do what you can do?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I would say so. Just do it. And I mean, if you fail, you fail, and you pick yourself up and keep going. Don't stress about it, because it's only going to make you worse.
So you went to college and you were thinking about being heavy into tech. Why heavy into tech? What was it before college that got you into tech? What were you into?
Well, I was kind of a nerd as a kid, so I would be able to build my own computers pretty quickly, and eventually I got a job at Best Buy fixing computers.
And the Geek Squad, huh?
Yep, actually a little before that,
yeah.
Which is kind of dating me a little bit, but we were fixing computers, or not fixing computers, depending on who you asked, and then I don't know, I just love working with computers and fixing them. People always ask me how to fix them, and it's just, I guess, natural to me. And so in high school, there was a video editing class that I took, which is somewhat of a joke, but it really showed me what I wanted to do. And eventually, like I said, I changed majors and I was editing.
How did your parents take you changing majors?
They were really good about it, because they always, in fact, I just wanted to go to community college out of high school, which was kind of strange considering I had a decent grade point average. And my mom's like, just apply to college. I mean, what's the worst you can do? You can always say no. So I did it, and I got in, and I was doing computer science. They're like, great, do whatever you want. And they were always supportive. They never really cared, per se, as long as I was happy. But I also had pretty good grades, so I don't think they were too worried about what I was doing.
Sounds like you have very good parents.
Yeah, I think I have great parents. I mean, my dad always worked really hard, and my mom was always there supporting me, and they never doubted what I was doing. And if they did, then maybe they helped guide me and I just didn't see it, but
that's kind of what good parents do.
Yeah, I think so. I learned a lot from them. That's what hopefully I'm doing right now.
Yeah,
so.
There you go. Well, I can hear the baby a little bit in the background, and I got to say, it's not every man who can sit there and hold an infant and do an interview at the same time and keep the baby happy. So you're to be commended for that.
Oh, good.
So you got out of college, and according to your LinkedIn profile, you started your career in network television, well, I guess just television, the talk show On Air with Ryan Seacrest as an intern.
Mm-hmm.
What is the intern? How does that work? Obviously, when I hear intern, I hear you don't get paid.
Oh, yeah, that's definitely it. But it was...
How do you survive? How do you do that? How do you get out of college with all that debt, I assume? And then you take a job that you don't get paid.
That one was actually during school, which kind of helped. So I was a junior in college, and my college I went to was a private school, and there weren't many kids in my major. And it was kind of strange because our job website always put these posts up that I guess no one ever responded to, I found out later. And so one time a girl put up an internship post for this On Air with Ryan Seacrest show, and she had gone to the same school I did. And I just was like, you know what, I'm going to apply. I probably won't get it, but might as well. It's on Fox, which is pretty sweet, and it's going to be a huge show. And so I applied and went in for an interview, and she's like, of course you got it. No one else applied from the school.
Really?
So, yeah, and I was like, are you kidding me? What? You guys are crazy. Everyone needs to apply. So that's how I got it, and it wasn't paid. I mean, I live about an hour away from L.A., and that's where it was, so... The gas money added up a little bit. My parents helped me out, luckily. I mean, they don't have the most money, but they really sacrificed a lot to let me do that. And I think I went 3 days a week from, I think it was 5 a.m. I got there till about noon.
Wow.
And then I went to school afterwards, and then who knows, Best Buy. To be honest, I don't remember. It was kind of a blur.
Yeah. Did you get to meet a lot of celebrities?
On that show, I bumped into a lot of celebrities because I'd get to go to the set.
Sure.
And since it was a daily show, they were always just running around. I think I didn't meet her, but Britney Spears, Janet Jackson, they're just there. It was kind of a strange thing because I learned a big lesson there that the people on TV that can kind of just pretend like they're celebrities are everyday people, they're the ones that people will work with again. The ones who are acting crazy,
yeah,
and are like, oh my god, I need to get there out, they're the ones that don't stick around usually. So,
well, yeah, I'm kind of like that in real life. People say, oh, they're so and so, and I'm like, yeah, well, yeah, you want to go get his autograph? And I go, no, I don't.
No, and it's funny too, because when you talk to celebrities like that, they're, I mean, they value that, I think, and they're real people, so they're just kind of like, cool, man, and they'll talk to you again. Yeah. Where the other people, they're just like, I got to go. See you.
So what does an intern do? I know what an intern does, but you know, let's assume that not everyone listening has a good grasp of an intern at a talk show.
Sure. So this talk show was a daytime talk show. It aired at 5 p.m., I believe, on Fox. And it started, like I said, early. So I was there at 5, and I first started in the news department. And the way the internship worked is you'd work in departments for a couple weeks and then rotate. So you do the news department, then you might do post-production, then you might do on set, and then you might do whatever else, maybe his assistant, I don't know. But I did the news department, and for some reason, I loved being there early and gathering all the news and seeing what I gathered in the morning air on TV that night. And I was also right next to the post department.
I gotcha.
And so on top of being there at 5 a.m., I was able to sit in edit bay and just watch. Sometimes some of the editors let me watch, which was really cool of them.
So it is unpaid, but in a way it's you're compensated with the education that you're receiving in the real world environment.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. So, yeah, that's a tricky subject because there's a lot of problems where some internships I've seen, they literally just go get people Starbucks.
Yeah.
And that's not an internship.
No.
That's, whoever's being offered that or is in the middle of one, I would tell them run away and email me and I'll try to find you an internship because that is a terrible, you're going to get burnt out and hate TV. And a true internship is, yeah, you're there, you're working for them. So yeah, they're getting work for free, but you should be learning enough information that when you're done with it, they either hire you or you're able to go somewhere else and apply that knowledge and get a paying job. You shouldn't just be sitting there getting coffee or checking the executive producer's email or whatever.
Right.
It's a tricky subject, but people need to stand up for themselves when they're interns because you don't want to get trampled on and learn nothing and waste 3 months of your time.
And it's probably not going to turn in anything if that's the way they're treating you to begin with.
Yeah, you probably don't want to be there anyways.
Right. So you were a production assistant for the Academy Awards. How did that come about?
Yeah, that was cool. That happened, after school I went to a show called The Showbiz Show with David Spade, and that was a late night comedy show, and I met some editors there who worked for a company called Chainsaw, and they're a big post-production company out here in Hollywood, and they do a lot of award shows. So I went to... I worked with those editors, and they were awesome, too. And they called me up one day and said, hey, we need a production assistant for the Academy Awards. And I was like, I can't turn that down. Who gets to say they were on set for the Academy Awards? So I didn't turn it down, and I was running between Santa Monica and the Kodak Theater at the time. Now it's the Dolby Theater, I think. And that could take an hour and a half or 2 hours, depending on the traffic. Which is ridiculous because it's only about 10 miles away.
Welcome to LA.
Yeah, that was the biggest welcome for me. that was the worst part. But, I mean, in the end, I was with people editing the Academy Awards, and on the day of, they're like, hey, there's nothing to do because we've already done all of our packages, so you can go to the stage. And then they're like, everyone on stage has to have a tux. So everyone who's on stage gets fitted for a tux, and I got a free tux for the day and got to walk around backstage with, who was there? I was walking there once going to the director's booth, and I think it was Jack Nicholson.
See, and
there's tons of people. It was amazing.
I totally would have pulled out the cigar, not lit, of course, and just walked around going, yeah, see, it's showbiz, see?
Oh,
that's,
my God.
That would have been my thing.
That would have been awesome, but then I'm pretty sure people would have been like, oh, he's never allowed here again.
Yeah, he has to go.
That would have been awesome, though. People would remember that.
Yeah, there you go. You got to be memorable. And let's be honest, true. You know, production assistant for the Academy Awards looks pretty good on a resume.
Oh, yeah.
Now, in your industry, is it really resume-driven, or is it you know so-and-so and so-and-so knows so-and-so?
I'd say it's actually a pretty equal part because... If you look at my resume, I have a very long resume that a lot of people know most of the shows I've worked on, and that's definitely helped me. But that happened because I knew people, and the connections got me jobs at other shows, and the other shows got me connections at other shows. So I'd say a big battle is making good connections. That's going to get you more jobs than your resume, but the times I've applied to jobs on websites like Staff Me Up, I think my credits got me the job more than anything else. So
did you get I was going to say, do you get more jobs by applying, or do you get more jobs through referrals?
Oh, referrals by far. Yeah. That's probably the trickiest part for new people starting out, is you have to latch on to some people and not be afraid to ask them for jobs, because if you are, you'll never get a job. So
you can't be shy.
Not at all. You have to ask them. That's why I always it's funny, when I write reviews and stuff, I always mention, like, people need to email me and ask me for internships, because I can find people internships and no one ever does. So
that's kind of out there. Do you think it's, why do you think people aren't asking? They don't feel like they want to bother you, or?
I think that, and like, it kind of goes back to my story about applying to the internship. I was kind of like, I'll never get the job, so why even apply? And I think that's what's in people's minds. I'm not exactly sure, to be honest, because most people that have asked, I've been able to get jobs, so, just because of the contacts I know.
Well, I could tell you that, you know, I've worked a variety of different jobs in my life, and the ones who generally succeed are those who put themselves out there and ask.
Mm-hmm.
And those who kind of go nowhere, there's a reason. They never ask. They don't try to push ahead. Mm-hmm. They're content of where they are, or they figure that it's not going to happen, so why bother?
Yeah, content is definitely a problem. And even myself, I found myself being content sometimes. And then
it's not necessarily a bad thing in life. I mean, you know, you want to be content with the family and, you know, your religion or whatever it is.
Yeah,
but,
definitely.
But I think in a professional setting, it might not be a good thing to be content.
I agree. That's in life. I think I am content. And that may be the problem sometimes when I went to work, is I'd push ahead. But then sometimes I'd be like, someone else will give me the raise, or someone else will see that I'm a good this and make me the next level. And a couple times that didn't happen. And then I was like, man, that was just because I didn't ask.
Well, you know, I'm listening to you talk, and I don't get the sense that you had a particularly hard childhood. You had loving parents, steered you in the right direction. You said you had good grades. So you didn't come from a broken home, or your parents weren't destitute. And yet, here you are succeeding. What do you attribute that to?
Oh, exactly what you said. I mean, my parents were great. They didn't have the most money, so we didn't grow up rich by any means, but for some reason there was always food on the table, and there was always, you know, I always had clothes, so I think...
They gave you that work ethic?
Yeah, oh yeah, my dad definitely did, and my mom too. They were always... Sometimes, you know, when your dad has to leave at midnight or your baseball game to go to work, that kind of sucks, but...
What'd your dad do for a living, or what does he do?
He's an electrician.
He's an electrician, so he can get a call at any time, really.
Yeah, my mom's a nurse, so they're both kind of on those... they can be called at any time, you're right.
That's a very... Both of those are very, you know, high-level professional. You have to have the education, and the more you have and the more experience you have, the more in demand you are.
Oh, yeah.
Especially an electrician. When we were having some really rough times in this country economically, the best electricians weren't struggling for a reason.
Exactly. Although, yeah, that's so true.
So let's talk about your writing. You obviously are big into editing, and that's your day job, but you also do product review, or you also do writing. What kind of writing you do? Who are you writing for? And how'd you get into this?
I do a lot of writing for Post Magazine, and an editor for that. Well, the lady that used to edit Post Magazine, Randy Altman, moved on and is starting her own site called Post Perspective. So I like Randy a lot, and so I try to balance it. But I write for both Post Magazine and Post Perspective, and I got into that because when I was in college, one of my professors also wrote for Post Magazine. He's like, I think you might like doing this, and he gave my name to Randy, and she's like, hey, you want to write? I forgot what I reviewed. I think it might have been, it was a cloud-based review system. Dang it, I forgot the name. But I just wrote a review, and I was like, hey, that's cool. I get to play with new technology, and people read my writing, and that, I don't know, for some reason that adds a level of, I don't know, people seem to take me more serious because I write reviews. It's kind of funny.
Oh, no, I get it. I've been writing reviews since 1995 when it comes to technology, and when you do it long enough, it's kind of nice that people respect your opinion.
Yeah, it's very strange, but it's, for some reason they just go, oh yeah, you must know everything. I'm like, sure, I guess so, but
you do get to play with a lot of neat stuff.
Oh yeah, that's the best part. All the newest, and like right now I have a HP Z840 in the box waiting for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm looking at one of those, another HP touchscreen and all kinds of cool stuff.
So what about Mama at home?
She's right now, she took our other son to his preschool, so they're over there playing, and I'm taking care of the kid, and Mama stays home with the kids, luckily. We're lucky enough to let that work.
Well, my wife does the same thing, and thank goodness, because she's so much more patient than I am, and I think it's important to the kids to have that kind of a stable home. So I'm assuming is your other child a boy or a girl?
Boy, we got
two boys. So you got two boys. And preschool, so they're not too far apart.
No, he's about to turn 3 next week, and this one's obviously brand new, so they're about 3 years.
How's he like his little brother?
Well, he loves his little brother. Now, when he looks at us and throws trains across the room, I don't know how to take that, but he's been very good. He loves his brother, but he's definitely cranked up the mischievousness a little bit to get some attention.
Well, you know, for his entire life, he's been 100% of the attention, and then the last 18 days, all of a sudden, there's competition.
Oh yeah, and but he's doing pretty good. But good. I completely understand. I mean, like you said, if all of a sudden competition's here, I'm gonna do the same thing.
No, if a hot woman starts showing up at your house all the time, your wife might not like that so much. So let me ask, and this is kind of a trite question, but I am curious. Where do you want to take all of this? Where do you see yourself doing 20 years from now? Is it still editing, or is it producing, or is it directing, or is it, what is it? Where do you see Brady 20 years from now? What's the trajectory of your career that you see going forward?
That's funny. That's a good question, because I always saw myself as editing. So when I started off, I was a production assistant. Then I became a post-production coordinator, then a post-supervisor, and I was like, that's not editing. So I took a good, I don't know, year off, and I, funny enough, I was a substitute teacher at a junior high for a little bit.
Boy, yeah, there's something about you, man. You got some fortitude in you.
Yeah, it was funny, because I was just like, I don't know if I could do this. I was like post-supervising, and it was constant work, and just, I don't know. I was like, I need to be an editor. So I took some time off, did that, which who knows what that was about. And then I came back, and I was like, I'm only going to be assistant editor, and I'm only going to be an editor. And eventually I became an editor, which was my goal. So from here, that's a good question. In 20 years, I could definitely see myself being an executive producer, because I'm pretty decent at making logical decisions, especially with my experience and technically. So I don't know, maybe a director of post is a better fit for me.
Yeah.
Something controlling the post production, because I know a little bit about it, and for some reason, like I said, people respect me because I write. So.
Well, yeah. I mean, you've got a broad range of abilities that can really translate into a lot of different positions. And as you said, you know, if you get too comfortable in any one thing, that's not necessarily a good thing.
Exactly.
And is it reality TV that you enjoy editing, or is it just editing in general? Which do you prefer?
You know, it's funny. A lot of people don't think highly of reality editing, but personally, I think it's one of the toughest things, because you're being given something that's recorded already, and you have to shape it. And I like it, but that's a good question. I kind of like what I do, as long as the content's good.
There you go.
I mean, if the content's bad, it's not going to be fun. But as long as the content's as long as the story's there, I like it. I just like stories. So whether it's dramatic or funny or whatever, I mean, I would love to edit something like Homeland or one of those shows. I just I love those.
Yeah, but you love the shows. Do you really want to be on the other end of it? Because doesn't that kind of ruin it for you?
I think so. Yeah? I think so. And it, especially compared to reality TV, I've heard that that kind of stuff is a little more monotonous. But I think you're right.
I
think
you'd have, you know, 20 takes of Jesse Pinkman saying the same lines over and over and over again on Breaking Bad, and by the time you're done editing it all together, you just don't even care anymore.
Yeah, even though it's one of the best shows ever, and you're I'm bored of it.
Stop already.
That might be, you know what, that might be the definition of hell, because everyone's like, it's the best show ever, but then you're like, I'm over it. That would really suck.
Yeah, they would think you're just, he's so arrogant. No, he sees it a billion times more than you do.
Yeah, like you said, you see Jesse Pinkman do 500 takes, you're probably going to be bored of it.
Yeah, right? Yeah. At least that would be my guess. Yeah. So is there anything you want to plug while you're on the show? Any things that you're writing? Any websites that people can learn more about you?
Yeah, I mean, just go to postmagazine.com and you can search my name and a whole bunch of stuff comes up. Or, like I said, Post Perspective is getting pretty good, actually. I kind of like it because, nothing against Post Magazine, but that's a magazine and it comes out once a month. So it's an awesome, big, cool, colorful magazine. But like I said, it's out once a month, whereas these new updated blogs are daily. I mean, I could write an article a day, like you know. I mean, you could just, if you had the time, pump it out.
And it's immediate gratification.
Mm-hmm. And I guess I'm addicted to it.
I think every writer has been, but it's only been in the last, let's say, 20 years that you could actually do anything with that. Mm-hmm. When I started my first publication, it came out monthly, and that was awesome. But then when we moved to the web only in 2000, it was even better because it was so... Look, someone's reading it right now.
Yeah.
And podcasting is the same way, too. I mean... You know, the work you're doing right now, no one's going to see for what, 6 months?
For Post Magazine?
No, for your editing. Yeah.
It depends. Yeah. Some, like on shows I worked on a long time ago, I mean, yeah, it could be 6 months.
Yeah.
It could be talk shows. That was the best part about them, is they were that night.
Immediate gratification. Yeah.
Yeah. You're done and you can go home. So it depends. But yeah, it can be. I've heard even longer. I've heard a year.
So is that postperspective.com?
Yep, that's it.
Great. I'll make sure we put it in the show notes for OWC Radio 2.0 episode 20. So those listening wants to find it, that's where you go. And I will have a link and as well to your Twitter account so people can find you there, because that's where I found you.
Yeah, Twitter, I'm trying to really step up my game. I've been tweeting a lot those last few months and I don't know. I'm getting some followers. Not that many, but they're coming.
So you bought OWC products in the past?
No, I actually haven't, but I what happened? I saw the new Thunderbolt raid, or one of them, in the past few months.
Mm-hmm.
And then that led me to your site. And it was funny because I have an old Mac laptop that is, I don't know, 4 years old, 5 years old. And I'm like, I feel like I should be able to keep this and upgrade it. And I saw you guys had some SSD instructions on how to pump up your old laptops to make them run better.
Yeah, we've got installation videos that will take you from, you know, unscrewing that first screw to buttoning it all up, ready to go.
Yeah, and that one really got me hooked, and I'm like, man, maybe I should just do that instead of looking for a whole new laptop. So I'm in the process of thinking of maybe getting an SSD, and that's what really got me to you guys.
So which Mac do you have? It's an old MacBook Pro?
Yeah, it's a MacBook Pro. I think it's got to be 4 years old now. It's getting ancient, but...
And you're getting the beach balls occasionally?
Beach balls occasionally, and I like Macs, but I, to be honest, I'm more of a PC guy.
Yeah, it works with your job.
Yeah, and I just like having both options because of my reviews, you know, so I have to have the OS X in there. And I was like, man, I bet you a little more memory and an SSD might actually bring it up into this century a little bit.
Oh, and you get a fast SSD in that machine, and you max out the RAM. And you literally have a brand new machine. But if you do it, I would say start from a scratch OS. In other words, a fresh OS. Don't do the migration. Yeah. Start from scratch like it's a brand new machine. And you will be amazed at how fast it will boot. My iMac that I've got sitting next to me here, I pulled out the CD-ROM drive and I put an SSD in there with our data doubler.
Oh, that's good. I saw that too.
Yeah. And see, that's another option with your laptop that... if you're not using the disk, the CD, DVD, you could pull that out and put the SSD in there with a data doubler, so then you have two drives in that machine.
That may have to do that, because who uses disks these days anyway?
That's exactly right. And even if you do, you can get an external enclosure. We sell them that you can take that DVD and put it in the external enclosure and connect it via USB if you have to.
Yeah, that might be the way to go, because these computers I've been getting lately to review, that these HPs are just, with those SSD cards are, I mean, those drives are just, they're so fast, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, my iMac boots in about 10 seconds now.
Yeah, it's amazing. It'll change your life.
Oh, everything is just so much faster with SSDs, from launching apps to saving to, it's just, my daughter, and I've said this on the show before, my 11-year-old likes to play, well, she was 10 at the time, but she likes to play these online games that use Flash from Adobe. And, within 10 minutes or so, Roadblocks, I think was the name of it. Within 10 minutes, my iMac was just screaming. The fans are going full blast. And,
yeah.
And I thought it was my processor. I thought, well, the processor's just not keeping up with this game. Mm-hmm. And so I would limit to her to about 15 minutes, because I started getting scared that the computer's going to melt down.
Yeah, you're going to blow up.
Yeah. I'm like, okay, that's enough. And she wouldn't complain, because she can hear it herself. Of course, sometimes she'd have to say, "What? I can't hear you." But then I put this SSD in there, and she asked if she could play the game again without thinking. I said, "Yeah, but remember, as soon as it starts getting loud, we need to turn it off." "Okay, yep, no problem." And I went out and I did something. I came back about a half hour later, and she's still playing. And I said, "Brooke, you're still playing that game?" And she goes, "Yeah, the fans never came on or nothing."
Oh, that's awesome.
It was the old hard drive. I don't know what it was doing, but
it was just kicking everything on.
Yeah, and it was just terrible. But with the SSD, same game, same website, same technology, Flash from Adobe.
Yeah.
Nothing, no problem at all. So, go figure.
Yeah, I think I'm going to have to do that, just because it's crazy how fast that can speed up your computer.
Oh, it's amazing.
Yeah.
So, I want to thank you, Brady, for coming on and talking to us today. I really enjoy having you and Sawyer on this episode. He's been, for his very first podcast at 18 days old, he's done a fantastic job.
I'd say so. I mean, if you would have got me on our first son, we might have had a different story. But this one, I don't know. I'm trying to knock on wood, but he seems pretty good.
Yeah, don't jinx it, man.
I'm trying not to.
You want to sleep again this century? Don't jinx it.
I know, exactly.
Well, at least this decade.
Yeah.
So if you guys want to learn more about Brady, his writing, you could find that at postmagazine.com, postperspective.com, and I will have links to that and his Twitter account in the show notes for OWC Radio 2.0, episode number 20. Brady, thanks for coming on the show. I appreciate it.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me on.